Welcome to The Defiant. I'm your host, Tegan Klein. Today we have the honor of diving into the mind of a true trailblazer, exploring her insights, experiences, and the lessons she's learned along the way, the visionary behind Crypto Soul, Erica Kang. Erica has been a bridge between the East and the West for a very long time, and today we get to dive deep into her journey. She grew up in Korea, then moved to the United States and did a stint in Vietnam more recently. She has not only reshaped the blockchain landscape, but she's also championed a new era of community-driven empowerment. Before we dive into all of that, Erica will share a little bit about how she first got involved in the crypto community.
So I started in crypto in 2017 as a community builder, and I've been hosting community like focused meetups since 2017 with the name under Crypto Soul, because I was based in Seoul, Korea at the time. And so for about 5 years, I've been dedicated to hosting a lot of layer one meetups back in the day. So all starting from, Ethereum to Solana to Cosmos, I've been really just hitting the right projects. And so, thankfully I've been able to have this like brand in which I was the kind of a bridge to Korea in that way. And then, having those consistent work kind of amounted to, in terms of size. So I was like, okay, maybe I should host a bigger like conference, hackathon, more, exciting things and bigger things. So I started hosting BitAlasia Conference, ETH Seoul, BitAl Vietnam, and Hackathon Seoul, like hackathons, all those things, since about 2018, 2019. And they really blew off. I mean, they were, they're getting better year by year, and I'm still doing it, really pushing hard. But I've been a community person at heart, and still I'm very neutral, independent. I have a personal brand, and so I've been kind of floating in the space pretty actively since then. So, yeah, that's how I started my journey and have been building my brand.
Amazing. Yes, I love that terminology of just the connector, because I feel like you really are like that bridge between the two, but also very much a connector. And I think community in crypto is so important. It's, I think Sandeep says community is the CEO of Web3, and I love that. Maybe tell us a little bit about that. Why are you passionate about community in the crypto space?
Yes. So when I started in crypto back in 2017, I think you remember as well, it was a lot of like distrust. I mean, it was unable to kind of weed out who's legit, who's not legit. I mean, it's more subjective, but actually there are a lot of scammers back then, more scammers than ever before, I think. And the ratio was really, really high. So in navigating into space, it was really hard for me to trust in the beginning. And I thought, okay, well, trust is the biggest thing I can give to the community. And like, when I met these people one by one, I thought, okay, like human power, like the human trust and, one-on-one interactions is the key to building a, let alone big size community. It's kind of amounts one by one. And I really felt the passion in that, and getting to know people one by one, founders, right, and contributors in the space. And that's how I really fell in love with the space, because I really found these little gems, solid gems that really shape the space and make it really productive and fruitful. And so, yeah, and that's really the roots of like how community builds and how followers build and contributors build. It's not like, I think it's more voluntary movement in which, you empower these people and incentivize in the rightful way to like as a culture, as a movement, right? And I think we really fall into this rabbit hole because of this story and because of this like persuasive power. So in that sense, I think that's why like I felt, okay, this is like community is what I should work for from the beginning, way beginning. And it could have been a top-down approach in which I could like, I don't know, join a bigger organization or something more, top-down. But then I felt, okay, to start from scratch, kind of like know what's in this space from bottom up, I thought it'd be really nice to learn from the community. And so, and I think really it is, it shapes the industry, and it really does expand it in a way. So, yeah, I mean, I truly still believe. Yes, Sandeep's right.
Absolutely. And it's a bottoms up movement. So it only makes sense. Amazing. And you lived in Korea and the US. I know you also did a stint in Vietnam, and I'm interested to kind of understand more of the differences that you see between these different regions. But before then, I would love to kind of understand more about that story from your own personal journey. What was it like kind of growing up in Korea and then moving to the United States?
Yeah. So I was born in Korea. So I'm more of a, and I was born and raised more in Korea. I think in terms of the years, I would define myself as just Korean, but people say I'm an Americanized Korean whatsoever. But yeah, so I went to the U.S. when I was younger. So like stayed there for 4 years and then came back to Korea and then went back to U.S. for grad school. So I did have a back and forth between U.S. and Korea for some time. And I think back then I was really able to master, well, not master, but learn a lot of bilingual characteristics. And so I was able to really define my, you know, bilingual characteristics, abilities, and then cultural interpretation as well. So I really had the gift, privilege to experience both cultures really deeply since I was young. I mean, it might have caused a little bit of, I mean, every person goes through identity crisis in which am I a Korean or am I American, right? In heart, but I always felt, okay, I really fell in love with both these cultures and I really felt like there's a lack of interpretation between both cultures. And of course, language is such a big issue, even now. And so I felt the passion to kind of be the bridge since day one, not in terms of crypto, but like in terms of like language or culture and that sort of thing, and politics as well, because I was majoring in political economy back in the day. Vietnam was an interesting throw because during my time in crypto, like half during COVID, right, I felt like, okay, well, I spent a lot of time in Korea and US, and I felt like my regional analysis was a little bit biased in a way. I thought I needed more diversity before I get older and before I, you know, get afraid to move, right? So I decided to choose Southeast Asia and particularly Vietnam. Vietnam is definitely a Korea-friendly country. I mean, a lot of countries are too, but Vietnam is a really, it was blowing up back then. And so I was very promising. And I really like tried it out for a year and I felt, okay, well, I should go more. And so I lived for 2 years and I was really, I think I did a really nice job in like trying to absorb the culture and language in a short period of time. But, you know, I think that gave me a little bit more balance in that sense. So, yeah, it's a lot of diversity. Now I'm in Lisbon, so it's like more diversity.
Oh, amazing.
Yes.
Amazing. And how do you kind of describe the cultures, maybe looking at it from a crypto lens? How do you explain the cultures between the US, Korea, and Vietnam?
Yeah, it's a really big definition, right? I mean, it's a characterization is something that I always try to avoid. But in terms of crypto, I mean, culture-wise, the investor culture is quite different. I mean, I think the human mind is always the same. That's what I always believe, the human intuition in which we want to invest, we want to earn money, we want to get rich. I mean, that's always in our hearts, right? But the way to do that, how do we, you know, achieve that goal? Because like Vietnam, for example, is a very growing, exploding economy right now. And it's very promising. It has a lot to go, but still, I think it's definitely promising. So that like Korea is more mature economy at this point. So the room for growth is a little bit limiting. But on the other hand, Vietnam is more exciting in my perspective. So I think people strive to really get to the top, right? To really learn, to absorb, to, you know, have the opportunity. So I think the passion is very intense in Vietnam. And also like investing, like the pursuit of investment is really big in Korea. As I've experienced in the past, like the Koreans love to invest in general. I think particularly in real estate back in the day. So that's why real estate markets in Seoul is just insanely large. I mean, how should I say? It's just crazy right now. It's very overpriced. But I think the yearn to really invest and reap benefits, it's innately in the Koreans' mind. So I think when the young generation was looking for something new to invest in, besides real estate and stocks, for example, they, you know, turned to crypto as like alternative way, and it's more exciting and innovative way to like really, you know, strive to go to the top, right? And I think that really intrigued a lot of Koreans and also Vietnamese too. So that was, I think that's like kind of the cultural context, I should say, social context as well. I mean, US, I think it's more stabilized. So I think in terms of that, it's really like it cares a lot about institutions, a lot about like regulation, which it should. And it sets a lot of the global standards in a way. And so I think the responsibility that the US has is just immensely huge in many ways, not only in crypto, but just global economy depends a lot on the US, right? And as Korea, like a person who's been mainly in Korea, the dependency rate is like superbly high. It's just immensely high. So like even in crypto, of course, everybody looks in what the US is doing, right? And kind of benchmarks from the US. And so, yeah, in many ways, I mean, it is definitely different culture-wise. I mean, how should I say it? Language is a very big issue even now. And like, even when I see a lot of bilingual people, you know, trilingual, right? It still has a gap in terms of information, in terms of this little cultural gap. I don't know what it is, but I think when Koreans speak in general or like approach, for example, in terms of business, it's less straightforward than, I guess I should say, the US, for example, because the agenda is definitely not out there. It's more like hidden. And for example, I will be smiling if I say, I don't like you. Like, I don't like you. But so it's not very apparent. There's many insinuate, like this very like hidden hints. And I think Koreans prefer it that way in terms of expression. It's very hard to say no in general. And so, yeah, manners is a very big thing ingrained in our like lives. So we have to be mannerful, very like, you know, smiling and just, you know, accommodating a lot of the times. So I think a lot of pressure is on like on the Korean side in many ways when you do business. And we talk like, you know, straightforwardly, because when I was educated in the US, all I heard was, state the main idea in the beginning, be assertive, right? And, you know, you got to speak from your heart, like just get it out there, right? And that was really one of the things that I really focused on back in the day when I was, yeah, the transition was very big. So
interesting.
Yeah.
And could it rub some people in Korea the wrong way if you come in too forceful? And have you seen that happen?
Many times. And I think they're like, well, we were just getting warmed up, right? We're just getting ready. But what just happened, right? Everything, it's too much. So they kind of back off. That's kind of what usually happens a lot of the times. And I've seen a lot of misinterpretation. A lot of like people get offended or just hurt. And so I try sometimes to meddle in between and say, hey, that's not, you know, what they meant. It's just like their style and how they approach things. So, yeah. Some things do happen for sure, and I've seen many things, but yeah.
Very interesting, and it's good to know, and I know you're hosting an event in Korea soon, so for all the Americans going, we need to be mindful of these things, so that's very helpful. But tell us a little bit about that event that you're hosting.
Yes, so the annual event that I'm hosting in Seoul is Fiddle Asia Eat Seoul, and this year another edition is SheFi Seoul Summit. I mean, I'm basically planning the entire Fiddle Week, I should say, and to kind of incentivize a lot of the builders and founders to come to Korea to see the scene, of course, and also to a lot of Korean barbecue every day with me. But just kind of like have a global bridge, right? And just the fact that it's in Korea, it makes a lot of good narrative and context, I mean, for people to come to Asia. And I know that this year is definitely the year of Asia, considering many, many major events will be hosted in Asia, not just in Northeast Asia, but DevCon is in Southeast Asia, right? So I think it will give a really good leeway into the like Q3, Q4, in which people want to, you know, test it out and just see how it works in Northeast Asia, for example, and kind of trickle down to Southeast Asia. That was my narrative, I should say, when I was, you know, hosting Fiddle Asia in March. So it's coming up in a couple of weeks. Super excited. We have an amazing lineup of speakers. It's just like, it's getting better year by year. So I'm just very grateful. And Vitalik, Ilya, you, Eva, Muneeb. I mean, so many good founders are coming. And I'm just like mind blown at the amount of support that I get, because Middle Asia is definitely for the builders and also from the community. So it doesn't really come from a big sponsor. It's more like a ground up conference. So, I mean, I cannot plan anything like huge or magnificent, but I think in terms of the narrative and I guess the intent that I tend to give to the community, I think people thought it, you know, it was sincere enough. So they're trusting me every year to come to Seoul. So I'm super excited. And, you know, in line with ETH, I mean, Middle Asia, there's ETH Seoul, which is the ETH hackathon in Seoul. It's the largest one. You know, it's going to be amazing. We have, we're hosting at a gaming company, which is great. And SheFi Seoul is a new thing I'm trying because I'm the Seoul chapter lead. And we're hosting at a women's university, which I graduated from. So that's super exciting as well.
Amazing. Wow, yeah. That's wonderful. Amazing. And yes. Can you talk to us a little bit about the different project landscape in Korea? What projects there are you most excited about?
Yeah, for sure. And there's been a ton of validators in the scene. I mean, I think a lot of the Cosmos validators are based in Korea as well. Like, because I was starting from the Cosmos Korea perspective, I was seeing from that lens. I mean, Kepler with a wallet and Osmosis. The main team is based in Korea, and Josh is Dogemos is a very good friend of mine, and also DSRV is, you know, a good infrastructure provider, and like they've been really partnering with a lot of amazing protocols out there, providing support for them. So, I mean, I'm really happy to support them as always. And Jiyun, who's the founder, he will be a judge at ETH Seoul. So that should be exciting as well. Radius is a ZK project that I'm, you know, good friends with and supportive about. And they've been kind of garnering the ZK narrative in South Korea. So I'm very excited to, because I'm all about, you know, tech and like the, you know, privacy. And so it's great that they're pushing that narrative, because it's a really hard narrative to push in Korea, honestly. And like people in general don't really care as much about privacy as in different regions, which is kind of interesting. But I think it's really important that they do this. And, you know, I really support them. Jihoon is also speaking, who's his founder. He's speaking at Middle Asia. But yeah, trying to really see a lot of infrastructure companies and also like protocol building companies on my from my lens. Of course, there are many gaming companies in Korea that have their own blockchain teams and that are building on like Aptos or like just, you know, Avalanche. Nexon is building on Avalanche, and Polygon. There are many Korean teams in gaming that are building on global protocols. So that's exciting as well. So I think in terms of Korean, I guess, characteristics, I think, I mean, I guess this nature, like innately, gaming is a very big, expectation is very high on the gaming companies because of the cultural power. I mean, the gaming power that a lot of the Korean companies have, right? So that's very interesting to see. And and they're like presenting out now, like to the public, which is a very big step forward, because usually before they didn't really get to do that to the Korean public. So they were a little shy, but now they're out there. They're, you know, announcing their what they've been building over the years. So that's really exciting to see. Yeah, so like a lot of diverse players in Korea, for sure. I mean, of course, exchanges are huge. I mean, I don't need to even express stress the fact that exchanges are huge. Upbit, Bitthumb, CoinOne, and they're doing amazing. Actually, a bunch of Bitthumb crew, they booked a Middle Asia tickets. They're like, so I asked, like, why, you know, what's the intention there? Like, what are you trying to see, get out of it? And they're like, we want to learn. Like, we want to learn one of the greatest projects out there. You know, hear from themselves, the founders themselves, like how they, you know, how they're shaping the project. And so it was more about research and learning from their end, which I always care about. And I'm like, it's all about learning and research. And from their end, they can get a more like a clearer view and a more, you know, a good lens on like what are good projects out there. So yeah, I'm really excited to invite absolutely. All of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And also there's so much that the exchanges can do just in terms of educating about these different tokens communities and the utility behind the token and things like that. So I'm always excited to see that when the exchanges offer those earn programs.
Ready to dive into the world of on-chain derivatives? Cint Futures is your decentralized portal to trading futures and perps with up to 100x leverage. Now live on Blast Mainnet, Cint Futures V3 combines limit orders and concentrated liquidity into a single unified liquidity model dubbed Oyster AMM, offering unparalleled capital efficiency. Earn triple airdrop rewards through an incentive program designed around Blast and Cint Future points. And join the new Trading Grand Prix competition to win a piece of the $500,000 prize pool. Visit synfutures.com, that's synfutures.com, to start your decentralized trading journey today.
You know, we used to hear a lot about the kimchi premium back in 2017, 2018. What are your thoughts on that? What's the reason for it if it persists today?
Kimchi premium. I don't know if it's a good connotation or a negative. I mean, for some, it's a good thing for sure. And, you know, it pumps up the market in many ways. And it's kind of like interesting where, I mean, the market's open at different, I mean, they're awake at different times. For example, like the Korean wakes up, you know, in one time and then the US wakes up. But like somehow this random like coin just pumps up out of nowhere in South Korea. Everyone doesn't know why. Like, why is it actually? And it's a different, I think, animal in that sense. I think it just like works differently. The Korean community, investor community, they just like, I don't know, the trigger's different, I think, for like in relative to other markets in many ways. So it works in a different mechanism. Like they work with different set of information. That's why I also was concerned about like information asymmetry, because a lot of the work and development by the project, global projects, are not being delivered as fairly, well, as transparently or importantly to the Korean community or even like the Asian community in large. So as a result, the projects that are popular, you know, that are, how should I say, more in trend, are very different from the projects that are actually respected by the global community in many ways. So that's where I feel a little bit of concern. That's where the language also kicks in, the cultural thing kicks in, like everything, like many factors that kind of may accelerate that. And so, yeah.
And the different applications, the different access to the internet, you know, there's so many things that are very different. But yeah, how do we get more of an information flow aside from people like you helping us with that? But how do we kind of do more information flow from the east to the west?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, that's always a mission that, like, I feel passionate about and also feel lost about. Like, so that's why I'm hosting these big events, is at least give opportunity to say, hey, this is a really put together, well, good quality event. And, like, the speakers here are just, like, much above par. Like, they're just, you know, and it's a good filter and also good curation, right? And so it'll give a good opportunity for Koreans to actually, like, be exposed to these amazing projects and promising projects. And so, like, that's one, you know, thing that I can do on my, from my level. And I just think, like, a lot of the media or, like, global media, like, Defiant, for example, maybe have an Asian channel. I don't know, something more, like, Asia-friendly in different languages. I know there's many efforts in trying that, but, you know, having a correspondent or something like an ambassador or kind of expanding, like, SheFi is also expanding to Asia because of this matter, just kind of, like, bringing the information experience that they get to Asia. And I know it doesn't work 100%, but it is definitely a generous effort. And I think it's, I mean, some companies are just purely US focused, I mean, or like Europe focused. And even now, I don't think Asia is considered as the, like, crucial market, I should say. Like, the level of importance has just gotten a little bit higher. I think people acknowledge Asia as a, you know, a powerhouse, but, like, in terms of practice, is it really being implemented, right?
Right.
So I think maybe after DEF CON, people will see, it is really super important.
Yeah, so, more time, yeah, more time, yeah. and these different areas in Asia. Absolutely. Yeah. And what would you say is trending right now, kind of in Korea or Vietnam? In the US, it's very much modularity, restaking, AI. Those are some of the topics that are trending. Do you think that that flows over, or are other topics trending?
Definitely AI is trending. Definitely. I mean, AI has been just like blowing up in Korea as well. And I think crypto and AI has been a very attractive narrative. People, even from the AI space in Korea, also trickle down to see what's happening in crypto because of this, which is a good thing because like they can come together, exchange ideas. And so there was an explosive number of AI events in South Korea recently in the past year. And I think like crypto has slowly had a part in that, so which is great. Of course, like always DeFi, I think DeFi wasn't a huge trend in Korea back then when there was a DeFi summer. But I think it's creeping back. And the meme season, right? The meme coin season, as everyone is either happy or critical about it, but still it is a trend, right? And people say, you know, they jokingly say the dogs and the cats, and like they do know about these things too. And I think it creates a little bit of fun, which Koreans do like. And that's a pretty big thing that people are focusing on. And of course, regulations. I mean, it's not fun, but you know, since Bitcoin hit, because in Korean, in US dollars, Bitcoin is not like a significant number. The price did go up, but it doesn't like ring a bell. But Korean, if you translate into Korean won, it actually hit, in Korean, it's like one, like, how do you say? How do you interpret this? 10 million won? Yeah, 10 million Korean won. Anyway, it's like a one, like when you hit like one, like something, 1 million, one, it's like rings a bell, right? So Koreans have been like yearning for this moment for such a long time. So that number just the past week has been crazy. So Koreans are like, let's see, you know, like my predictions were right, you know, that kind of thing. So that's just the ringing a big bell. And at the same time, concerns about taxation, you know, what's going to happen to more listings. Those things are always on the surface.
Absolutely. Yeah. And with that, you know, there's been a lot of movement away from the dollar into Bitcoin as kind of this digital gold store of value, reserve currency, that kind of thesis for Bitcoin. Do you think that there's a similar kind of understanding or maybe passion in Korea as well for Bitcoin as the store of value?
Bitcoin is definitely respected, even from like Bank of Korea or just, you know, in terms of financial institutions, they do acknowledge the value of the Bitcoin. Of course, it's like the anchor, you know, in which like this whole ecosystem revolves. And I think that's what the institutions are agreeing on. But at the same time, I think when it comes to like having this store of value and like the currency, I should say, I think they don't consider Bitcoin as the currency. It's more like the store of value, right? As you said, but like they're considering to like, you know, run their own, like for example, stable coin, for example, and just kind of gear it towards like KRW, Korean won, and have their own currency. That's what they usually care about. It's different from acknowledgement, but execution is different. So I think, yeah, it's a little ironic, but it's how governments want to take control of their own, right, and systems. And so it's a little
That's why ironic. We need Bitcoin. Yes, absolutely. And what about kind of on the other side? So that's the monetary policy side. But what about on kind of the Web3 decentralized internet? Do you think that there's passion there?
I think there's a passion in decentralized socials, as well. Like internet wise, yeah. I mean, as I said, like Koreans care a little bit less about, generally privacy. I mean, privacy hasn't been a humongous issue in South Korea. It hasn't really hit the Koreans at heart. I think, like sharing your personal information hasn't been a offensive thing, more so than, you know, what hits, like, for example, Americans, for example, they're like very defensive about it in general. But I think Koreans are like, it's fine. It's kind of like a little bit more chill, I should say, a little nonchalant. And so in that regard, like decentralized internet hasn't been, as long as it's fast, people are like, well, like speed is the most important thing. Speed, efficiency, like, you know, I think Koreans really care about how fast it is, how easy it is. That's like everything is geared towards that. So very impatient people, like fast, like easy, just like get it done. Like it doesn't matter how, but just like it. So I think that is a really big characteristic that Koreans do care about. And so, I mean, of course, if there is a good solution, of course, I think it will be... Koreans would love that, and socials as well. Yeah, because like all the socials are not like centralized socials are not really doing their part these days, right? They're really crumbling, and I think Koreans are very disappointed as well. So, like, what is the next wave? Like, where is it coming from, right? And that's why, yeah, there's a lot of interest in that as well.
Absolutely amazing. And then to get a little bit more spicy, Terra Luna was one of the maybe more successful projects out of Korea. How has that impacted, that implosion impacted the crypto community in Korea from your perspective? And I'm sure you're kind of rebuilding some of that momentum.
Yes, absolutely. And back then, it was such a, I mean, I was in Korea at the time, and it was such a miserable time for all of us. Like, I think I remember talking to a lot of the industry people and non-industry people as well, but everyone was like near tears, I think, at the time. Even if you are not affected nor affected, I think just the like despair that a lot of people felt, like we tried so hard to build a healthy ecosystem. And then this one incident just like just dilutes the entire image of our industry, what we work for. And I mean, we always are treated as scammers anyway, but it was getting better. It was getting better. And then, I mean, we've been working so hard for many years, and then this happens, right? And that's why, like, I mean, I was not affected probably financially, but I think in terms of just the entire image wise, and I'm as an kind of an ambassador, I should say, like a bridge, like it's just really disheartened me. And as a person running events, it's just, yeah, it was such a negative, sad moment. And I think since then, it's been so hard to recover any of that. Yeah, and I think a lot of projects are trying to revive from that even now, and they're trying to like slowly get back on track. So I see many like ex-Terra like team members or just people who are involved. Like there are so many, you know, trying to get back on their feet and trying to start a new project. Yeah, and like take the courage to do it again. You know, it's promising to see that they're really trying to like get on their feet, trying like to contribute again in a, you know, more mindful way. But I think, yeah, it's been and like, so funny story, and when you come to Korea you'll see, but there's a very famous beer brand called Terra in Korea
after Terra Luna.
No, it was just there. It was there from, you know, it's a new brand, but still it was very popular even before, you know, Terra was the thing. And same spelling, same, you know. So, and when that happened, everyone, you know, like had this shot of Luna, like the Terra, you know, beer, and just kind of, it's a more of a ha-ha moment, but just, you know, bitter moment, but at the same time, like, hey, you know.
Totally.
Yeah, so that was very awkward, and yeah, it was kind of cringy, but at the same time, but it's still there though, so you can check it out.
Well, hopefully, you know, it makes everyone stronger, and there's a lot of lessons to be learned from that, and it shouldn't reflect the entire industry, but definitely something for us to learn from. And tell us a little bit about the community you've built with Crypto Soul. You've kind of touched on it, but I would love to kind of dig in a little bit more.
Sure. So in the previous years, I've been anchoring a lot towards Korea and hosting events in Korea back at the time. So for about 4 years or so, I've been just straight handling, handling all the like layer one meetups back in the day. So that was how I built my brand. And I collaborate with a lot of different protocols, competing protocols, I should say. But, you know, I was very privileged to do so, because it's very hard to maintain that color, to maintain the neutrality even now, because they say, oh, you're partnering with, you know, like Polygon, or but why are you not, you know, why are you not doing with us? Are you that person now? Are you in that clan now? It's kind of like that, right? So I get that. I got this question so many times, but it took a lot of effort to prove that, no, I'm actually really, you know, being at this neutral agnostic, and it really took a lot of references and examples, right, to prove that. And I think now I'm at a point where I'm pretty stable. In terms of region, since I moved to Vietnam, I got to think a lot about regional expansion. And since that's why I hosted Biddle Vietnam, because I felt, okay, Biddle Asia doesn't mean just Korea. Asia doesn't mean just Korea, right? I can definitely host in many different Asian countries. And so that's why I'm in the region anyway, so why not just try to hosting events in Vietnam? So I try to take the leap forward in expanding the Crypto Seoul brand. And so that's why I started doing Crypto Vietnam and kind of adding the region one by one. And also like hosting a lot of side events, builder breakfasts around the world, in Paris, or I mean, mostly in like US, Europe. But I really try to diversify the regional diversity, right? And so now actually this last year I found like I expanded to Crypto Planet. So like I'm like, okay, maybe Seoul is a little limiting now. So I feel like I've been more global lately, and I think it's about time to expand to Crypto Planet. So yeah, that's my new brand
now. Oh, congrats. Amazing.
Thank you. And I think I already host so many events around the world anyway, and I think it wasn't a big surprise to a lot of people. And I mean, just last weekend I hosted an event at Stanford University and about crypto and AI. And I think that was an enormous moment. And I think it really proved that, okay, I can definitely pull off like amazing events outside of Seoul and where my comfort zone lands, right? So yeah, it's a very exciting moment. It's a very transitional moment for me, and how to expand the community, how to solidify it at the same time. It's a very big mission this year, and really hope to make it right. So yeah, onwards.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, that's super exciting, and I love that. And crypto is such a global movement as well. And amazing. So, well, what's the best way for listeners to kind of dive into the Korean community and kind of stay in touch with what's happening there, the different projects, developers? Is it, you know, conferences, Twitter? What's the best way?
Honestly, Koreans have not been the most like friendly in Twitter, which was like, so we back in, I remember like maybe 3 years ago or even before that, we've been screaming to Koreans, like, please use Twitter. Like, please, like everything's happening there. Like, you're missing out so much. That's why. So I remember like when I was doing like live streams, I was like crying that out loud. And so now it's getting better for sure. So I'm really happy to see that there are a lot of prominent Koreans like delivering good information about local projects, but also what's happening in Korea. So that's great to see, but still a long way to go. So I think just honestly being on the ground really does help. Like it's so much different when you hear it from an indirect third party like me, for example. And also when you come to Korea and like really like just be on the ground, it does make a big difference. Spend a week here. It does feel different. You can feel the temperature. You can feel, you know, how people are thinking. It's kind of like, you know, one-on-one interviews, right? You can kind of like set these like intense one-on-one interviews with like diverse Korean projects or players and kind of have their take on it. And being there does, I don't know. I'm a believer in like offline experiences. And so if there's a big conference or like not even a conference, but if there's like anything that's happening or around the region, like it's definitely worth dropping by. And yeah, I think that's when a lot of projects had an aha moment, actually. And since then, they've been kind of coming regularly because they also do agree that it is worthwhile investing their time and energy and coming into the region. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And you mentioned earlier in the podcast that there are a lot of events happening in Asia. Can you talk to us a little bit about some of those other events that are happening?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, as an events person, like it's already in the line. So actually right before ETH Seoul in Biddle Asia, there's ETH Taipei happening the weekend before. So that's really amazing. So I'm really close to the ETH Taipei folks, and the community there is amazing. So it's definitely worth a check out. Just after my events in Seoul, there's a Web3 Hong Kong Fest, Web festival happening in Hong Kong run by Hashkey, Wanxiang, and they're amazing too. They're having this whole week of events as well. So like, I think Q1 is settled for that, Hong Kong. And then there's Dubai, but that's coming into the more non-Asia territory. I mean, yeah, and then let's not touch Dubai yet. And then in July, there's EdCon happening in Tokyo, which is amazing. I talked to the organizers and, you know, they're super excited to host EdCon there. So yeah, that should be really big. And then of course you cannot, you know, miss out September, in which there's Lana Breakpoint in Eat Singapore in Singapore. And of course Token is like inevitably huge. And so that whole week will be crazy in Singapore in September. And also there's Korea Blockchain Week the weekend, I think week before. So that's like the whole September is going to be just as usual blowing off. And then of course the DEF CON, you know, like it's gonna be so big that I don't even like, I can't even fathom how massive it's gonna be, right? I'm just a little bit scared at the same time, I mean excited. So I think since maybe late October there should be a lot of events popping up in neighboring countries and besides Bangkok, Thailand, because like for example I want to do an event in Vietnam before a DEF CON hits, for example. And I think a lot of, I mean, when you're in the region, I mean every Asian country is different, so it is worthwhile like dropping by. They're only 1 hour apart by flight, so it's actually pretty doable. So within Southeast Asian region, so yeah, I mean it's that whole November, October also crazy. So I think in general the entire year is just gonna blow off, and so yeah, it's a big year for Asia for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. The Ethereum community is going to descend on Bangkok, Thailand. So get ready for us.
Absolutely.
Amazing.
I can't wait for Thailand. Yes.
Yes, it's going to be great. Amazing. And then the last question is just, how are you defiant?
First of all, I try to like define what's defiant. I mean, as a woman navigating this space, independent as well, having an independent brand like you, for example, it's so hard. It's just so hard to go against the norm, the expected norm. And you know what I mean? It's been really hard to position myself, taken seriously, in this space, and fighting the expectations, social expectations that I get all the time, as a mother, as a woman, especially in Korea. I come from a very conservative background, so it does have a very big toll and like set of responsibilities for me. So it's been really, I think going against that, just like being say, hey, I'm in crypto, like what? What are you doing? So I think that itself, being a very active woman in crypto is since 2017, like you know, has been just that whole life has been defiant, fighting the, you know, the norms, the expectations, and kind of going my own way, plowing my own path. I think that's what I really love about this space as well in my career. Pioneering into what people haven't done before. That's always so exciting. And also kind of like, you know, it's kind of going against everything, right? Like, you know, like going through the weeds and kind of, and that's been a thrill actually. It's difficult, but I think it's definitely worth the fight. And so in many ways, yeah, I think that's, that defines.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we need more women out there listening. Like, don't be intimidated by the industry being male dominated. We need more of you. And hopefully soon crypto will be less unpopular. I think soon it's already starting, right? The masses are coming.
Yes, for sure.
Amazing. So, well, thank you so much for coming on The Defiant. It was so great having you.
Thank you so much, Tegan. Thank you.